You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Okay, 5432.
32,
be advised. Squad's going out to 92 Buck Road. Gonna be for a gunshot victim. A male in the parking lot of 92 Buck Road saying he was shot by a subject in a blue minivan.
Now take me through kind of what happened.
The homicide occurred on February 11th, 2009, which I believe was a Wednesday morning. And the dispatch time was about 9:02 a.m. What I remember about that day, it was unseasonably warm for February. It was, we didn't have jackets on when we were out in the shopping center. We were out in just shirts. Doing interviews, and it was a very sunny winter day.
They couldn't find anybody with any reason to kill my brother. It wasn't about money. He didn't owe anybody money. They couldn't find any reason at all. It's just a total, complete mystery.
Minivan possibly up Buck Road at this time. 92 Buck.
Henry.
Receive. Carter back.
All right, 22.
22 receive.
Have a direction of where he was traveling, the blue minivan.
Intake still in line. Get him more.
This was a cold-blooded, calculated killing. This killer acted deliberately, intentionally, with malice.
And so you're investigating who?
The death of Eric Birnbaum.
From KYW News Radio.
In Philadelphia.
Philly.
Philadelphia.
We knew where the crime scene was in a parking lot right outside Terry Goldberg's law firm. So I don't know that we actually went there. It was too sad.
These are true stories
about unsolved crimes.
Actually, we're standing right in the area where Eric Birnbaum had parked his car. And exited his car and was standing probably right about here.
It's not often that we have a case where we are stumped. And I hate to be so dramatic, but we want to make this right. We want to avenge his death and bring his killer to justice.
We did all the things that you do. We had a funeral and we sat Shiva and we, you know, tried to make the girls peaceful and make ourselves peaceful and figure out how to keep living.
I'm Kristen Johansson.
I'm Tom Rickert.
This is Gone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
isn't a very big town. Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The last commuter train stopped rumbling through in the 80s. It's in Northampton Township, about a 40-minute drive up I-95 from Philadelphia. Buck Road cuts through the town. You'll find a handful of places to shop along the way. A few delis, there's a bank, a couple of law firms.
My name is Lieutenant Charles Pinkerton. I've been a police officer in Northampton since June of 1990. At the time of this homicide, I was one of the detectives that responded out to Gateway Shopping Center, where the law firm of Terry Goldberg is. And sometime later on the day of February 11th, I was assigned as the lead Northampton investigator responsible for investigating this homicide.
This happened a decade ago, but it also happened in a really peaceful part of our area, of our region, when the sun's out and people are just trying to go to work. The timing of it is bizarre. Where it happened is bizarre. And who it happened to? From everybody I've talked to with this case, there's not one person that could say a bad thing about Eric.
Eric was a attorney who specialized in workers' comp, trying to get compensation for people who may have been disabled on a job or may have a disability or injury that prohibited them from continuing to work. And that's the type of law work he did at Terry Goldberg's law office, and that he had previously practiced for the law firm of Slifkin and Axe. Eric Birnbaum was an attorney there for 25 plus years doing workers' comp law.
I went up to Northampton Township to talk to Lieutenant Charles Pinkerton, Chuck Pinkerton. They eventually took us into the back, into this interrogation room that's like a walk-in closet, but turned into an interrogation room. Honestly, something that you would see on TV shows. The rectangular fluorescent lights above, metal chairs and tables, and then there's this like fan vent going in the background that you can hear throughout our interview. Across from me was the district attorney, Matt Weintraub, Tim Carroll, who's a detective within the DA's office, and Lieutenant Pinkerton. You know, he's been following this again. This has been on his plate for 10 years. 10 years. 10 very long years for him. He was there from the beginning.
So what would this mean to you for this to be solved?
Closure. Closure for police department, for myself, and most importantly, the Birnbaum family, his daughters, his sister, for his father who's still surviving. Those people need closure. That's the most important thing.
Do you talk to them often?
I talk to his sister, Donna Birnbaum, and we've stayed in touch over the years. When you investigate a homicide, you sort of have to, you know, learn about the family, and you learn about, you know, who Eric was. You talk to the family, and, you know, they share different thoughts about him.
So, sorry, how's everything going?
Okay, good.
How's the weather down there, Donna?
Nice and steamy.
Not like up here in Pennsylvania. It's a nice day out here, but it's a little chilly for me, at least in the office.
Gotcha. Where are you at?
We're right in Philadelphia.
Downtown?
Right at 15th and Spring Garden.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And where are you in Florida?
I'm in Palm Beach County on the East Coast.
Nice.
My name is Donna Birnbaum. Eric was my baby brother.
So when you say baby brother, and by the way, I'm a big sister too, thank you for saying baby brother, because he makes fun of me when I say baby. He's like, I'm not a baby. But they're always your baby brother, right?
Exactly. He was 6 years and 6 days younger than me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So were you guys close growing up?
We were pretty close until I left home because I was the bad child. I was the wild girl. And he was still young when I left. But we got close again, very close, as adults. We tried as a family to always have a family reunion. Myself and my significant other and my brother and his girls and my parents. This is after his divorce. One of the reunions, I lived in Southern California, and we had this big picnic in the park overlooking the ocean. My nieces and my mom and I would go shopping. We'd leave Eric and my dad at home. But then after the reunion was over, he always went home and he would get all the pictures printed, and he would make each of us a picture book for the year, a memory of the reunion. It was a very sweet thing.
Oh my gosh. How many did you guys have of those?
I remember 5.
Tell me what it was like growing up with him, what kind of kid he was, what he liked to do.
He was just one of the boys. He had a bunch of kids all growing up in the same neighborhood together, and they stayed friends all these years. We grew up in Philadelphia at Front and Cheltenham. I went to girls' high, he went to Central. He went to religious school after high school. You know, so he spent a lot of time studying and gaining knowledge and learning to be part of a community. And he was always very family oriented. We both were. Our family was a pretty cool family.
Are your parents both living still, or?
No, my mom is gone. My mom died in 2015. And then I stayed in Florida to help my dad because he's not able to care for himself. When this happened to my brother, my dad's mind just went away a little bit, and it never really came back. I mean, it happened to all of us, but we all had to come back and live in the world, and my dad doesn't 100% live in the world anymore. And if I explain to him what had happened, I don't know what his comprehension level is anymore.
This happened in your neighborhood?
Happened in our neighborhood. We're a township of approximately 40,000 people. We don't have a lot of shootings. We have very, very few homicides. And when this occurred, it happened, you know, at the start of the business day on a Wednesday in front of a business. We were certainly familiar with the law firm of Terry Goldberg. His picture in advertising was something that many people in this community and this area of Lower Bucks County would be familiar with, because his picture was on all the advertising as the face of the law firm.
Can you say and spell your name, and then also give me how you're related in any way to Eric?
My name's Terry Goldberg. I met Eric when we were young teenagers, probably about 15, 16 years old.
Met in high school. They lived a few streets, a few minutes from each other, but there was something there with their friendship that just clicked.
Eric went to Central, I went to Northeast. Once we became friends, it didn't really matter that we went to different high schools. Then we went to college together.
At Temple in Philly.
Then we went to law school at the same time.
They both went to Delaware Law School, and then they transferred to different schools.
He went to John Marshall out in Chicago. And I went to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Terry's very protective of his family, and he said that Eric and he were so close that he actually even let Eric date his sister.
I would never let any of my friends near my sister, but Eric was such a good guy, and I thought his intentions were honorable all the time.
It was kind of a funny story he told.
Best friends for so many years. We led different lives, though, because I stayed single till I was about 36. And Eric was married earlier.
Terry's the one that introduced Eric to his wife, the mother of his children, now his ex-wife.
And they asked me to be the godfather of their children.
They were best friends for their adult life.
When I was getting married, he was still alive. Now when I have kids that are getting married, I wanted to call him and tell him that one of my kids was getting married.
There's a type of friendship I think everybody may understand of, there's just this other level of a connection that just makes you family. There's no secret. There's nothing too personal to tell. Everything's just out there in the open for this other person because you know that they're not going to judge you. That was Tara and Eric's friendship.
I think about calling them. I just do. It's hard. It really is hard to not have that person to call. There's still times now when I feel like calling him.
And I had a friend like that too for 30 years who recently passed away from an illness. And I just understand this friendship.
I think, I got to call Eric. And then I kind of come back to reality that I can't call Eric. Eric wasn't the kind of guy to just go out to a bar with me because I was single and going out to a bar. You know, he was home with his wife and children. He did whatever he had to do to make sure his girls had what they needed and that they were happy. He would do without things himself if it meant getting the girls things that they needed. He was just a great parent. Even after they were divorced, Eric went to his ex-wife's house on Sundays to have brunch with them. And by that point, there was no fighting or anything once they were through the divorce stage. I think by the time Eric passed away, they were actually friendly again, him and his ex-wife. But he would go there and have brunch with them and clean their cars for them every Sunday. He'd wash their cars. He just, in my mind, best dad out of all of my friends. He's the best dad. Like some guys, when they get divorced, just from the experiences I've seen, some guys are like, okay, great. Now I got 6 nights free a week and I only got to, you know, get my kids on Friday night and drop them off by Sunday. Eric was not like that at all. He would want to see them every day. I think that was what tore him up the most about his divorce, was that he couldn't tuck them in every day.
Terry told me that Eric was ethical, law-abiding, type A personality, could only follow the rules.
Probably the most ethical person that I ever knew.
Didn't go outside the lines, ever.
Everything was by the books, and this is how it has to be, and these are the rules, and Eric wouldn't bend them.
He was very, he calls him squeaky clean.
He was also a really good lawyer. And there are a lot of lawyers out there.
He wanted to do the research, he wanted to know everything before he went into a courtroom.
If Eric gave you an opinion about something, it wasn't off the top of his head. It was well-researched, well-thought-out.
Terry ended up getting Eric his first job.
As a lawyer, just through somebody I knew that was looking.
He got him his second job also.
And then Eric remained with Slifkin and Axe for probably close to 20 years. We remained really close for all those years. I tried to get him to leave and come work with me several times over the years. And he would always say, in typical Eric fashion, you know what, I wouldn't want anything that could possibly happen at work to affect our friendship, so I'm going to decline. And he did. Until mid-2008, I lost a pretty skilled attorney here who wanted to go open his own practice. And I once again asked Eric if he would come, and finally he said yes. And it didn't last very long, because that was probably July, August of 2008, and this happened in February of 2009. We're coming up on 10 years.
February 11th, 10 years ago. What happened to Eric Birnbaum that morning? Next on Gone Cold.
When there's no closure to the mystery and the sorrow, Gone Cold is KYW News Radio's true crime podcast about unsolved cases in the Philadelphia area.
Someone has to know what happened and who did this.
We searched the wooded area, we searched dumpsters.
Someone's life ended tonight. It's the most important thing you can investigate as a police officer.
Who has the clue that unlocks the truth? Search for Gone Cold KYW in the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I apologize. I mean, I know that I'm asking you to like reopen this wound, but can you go back to the day that you found out about your brother and just what happened, how your parents found out?
I was home in California. I got a phone call pretty early in the morning, California time, you know, of course, it's 3 hours. 3 hours earlier than it is here in the East.
My morning that morning was like any other morning. I got up, I watched SportsCenter with my kid, and then my wife went to take him to school. And I jumped in the shower. And I never answer my house phone. Even to this day, there's nobody who calls me on it. So I just don't.
I got a phone call from Terry Goldberg, and right away I knew that that wasn't going to be good news, because there was no reason in life that my brother's friend and employer would have to call me early in the morning like that unless it was something terrible.
That morning I was just getting out of the shower. My wife had just left to take my kid to school 10-15 minutes earlier, and I answered the phone. I don't know why. And all I heard was a hysterical woman screaming. I thought it was my wife, and I thought it sounded horrible. Just, I couldn't make out the words. It just sounded horrible. And I had this picture in my mind that my wife was in an accident. And I just kept saying, Cindy, calm down. My secretary's name is Cindy, and my wife's name is Cindy. So I had the name right, but I had the wrong one. It was my secretary, Cindy, that was calling to tell me what happened. And she was standing outside talking to him when it happened.
Okay, 5432. 32, be advised. Squad's at the 92 Buck Road. Cindy for a gunshot victim, a male in the parking lot of 92 Buck Road.
The law firm of Terry Goldberg was on the left end here. It was only a single office building.
She was calling me from the parking lot within seconds of it happening. I was thinking it was my wife calling me on her way to school and that something horrible happened. It sounded like somebody was killed, literally. And then the first words I could make out were parking lot. The next word that I was able to make out was Eric. And then I heard office. And I just threw on sweats and ran down to the office.
You got to the scene. What was the scene like? What was the chaotic screen?
It was very chaotic by the time I got to the scene. Numerous police officers were on the scene because that location in our township is very close to the Lower Southampton border. The chief of police of Lower Southampton and another Philadelphia police captain from Philadelphia happened to be in the area and were one of the first officers that were on scene.
Terry called me and I was sitting at the top of the steps because we lived in a townhouse then, and I think I almost fell down the steps, but I got off the phone and Terry just told me, Don, a terrible thing has happened. You have to come to Philadelphia just as soon as you can get here and get your parents here. Something happened to Eric.
When I got here, you know, they were working on Eric in the parking lot, but they wouldn't let me near him. And I asked them if he was going to be all right, and they told me no.
Mr. Birnbaum had pulled into the parking lot right at the same time as a coworker. The coworker was getting out of their car. Eric was getting out of his car, and they began to exchange morning greetings at the back of their respective vehicles when a male came up and shot Eric Birnbaum one time in the back of the head. We're standing right in the area where Eric Birnbaum had parked his car. Very close range. And Mr. Birnbaum didn't know the person was behind him. Probably right about here when the co-worker exited their car there, and Eric was facing in this direction, which is south, speaking to the coworker when the suspect came up behind him
and
killed
him. And it was quick.
One shot, very quick. He was being tended to by paramedics that were already on the scene.
Where is he laying?
Right here. In this travel way, right here in front of the cars where we're standing, there is a lot of blood from the head wound.
Back?
He was on his back when I got here and being tended to. And immediately the supervisor of detectives, upon arrival of the county detectives, everybody was given jobs and to start conducting field interviews of the witnesses that were crowded around here, and most of those witnesses were secondary to the scene, people that had come out after the shooting. So we took statements from them and we interviewed the witness that was next to Eric at the time of the shooting, and we spoke to other employees of all the shopping center and the area businesses.
And so really it was just the coworker that was coming out of their car. They both were obviously getting into work because it's at like around 9 o'clock. Did they see anything?
Certainly they provided a description of the person. They don't know a motive, and they don't know what happened afterwards because of the traumatic nature of the incident.
Were they able to comprehend it, I want to say, or because it just feels like a
great
like
shock, disbelief, and just taken very by surprise of everything happening and not knowing what's going on. So it's very chaotic for that person. They had no idea this was coming.
I told my significant other to pack for us. I called a limo company and said, we have to go to the airport. And I called a girlfriend and said, you have to take care of the cat. And I called my parents and said, you need to meet me in Philadelphia tonight. And I managed all the time differences and made it cross country and landed in Philly and were able to meet my parents' plane. We went up to, I don't know, Langhorne area and to a hotel, and Terry actually came to meet with us to tell us that Eric was gone. It was awful.
What did the witness say that they saw?
They heard the shot. They came out. They heard the screaming from the coworker, and they observed this minivan, you know, driving quickly through the parking lot away.
Shot by a subject in a blue minivan. Minivan possibly up Buck Road at this time. 92 Buck.
Henry.
Received. Car to back.
All right, 22.
22 received.
Have a direction of where he was traveling, the blue minivan.
Making a right onto Buck Road and heading towards Feasterville.
How long did all this take?
Less than a minute.
Did people report hearing a gunshot and that's why they came out?
Certainly people that were in the area ran in and alerted the people in the delicatessen of what had happened, and they made a 911 call. And they came out and assisted in the first aid for Eric Birnbaum.
So were other people in the parking lot at the time in general? Or, I mean, I know there was that one person, that, you know, the one coworker, but were there people that saw something?
There were people in the parking lot at the time it happened. Whether or not they attributed it, and we've spoken to everyone, we can't say to that, but we have spoken to a couple people that had been in the parking lot just prior to the incident and that had pulled in afterwards.
But those are the people that then ran to either the delicatessen or... Okay.
That's correct.
So where exactly was the blue van? Was it this way or...?
The van was seen driving this way through the shopping center, exiting there and heading south on Buck Road towards Feasterville.
The van was what, a couple parking spots?
We don't know where the van was at the time. We don't know where the van was located at the time of the homicide. So it would be speculation where the van was parked.
What was really the first thought about what happened, and what was the first thing investigators did?
Well, initially, when the flash description went out, I mean, the police officers were looking for a light blue minivan with a male driver. That was the initial focus, to get as many police cars along the Buck Road, Busselton Pike corridor to try and identify that vehicle.
As soon as they finished talking to the witnesses and learned about the blue van, police sent out a flash.
Flash is a police broadcast, emergency broadcast, with as much information as possible of a recent or previous crime.
This is Tim Carroll.
I'm a Bucks County detective, so I'm a police officer that works for the district attorney. I was here on day one, as well as seven or eight other county detectives. I had just arrived at the office and was given a phone call. I was told there was a shooting, probable homicide, in Northampton Township, and I was directed here.
This was a short time after that flash went out, telling police to look out for a blue van.
Because it was a homicide, and because we're not that far from Philadelphia, and the direction given by a witness, it was deemed that Philadelphia should be given the information to. They were given it, and a Philadelphia 7th District police officer heard the flash and made a car stop.
Detective Carroll was on his way to the crime scene, the parking lot outside Terry Goldberg's office, when he got a phone call from the station.
I was called and told that there was somebody stopped, a traffic stop in Philadelphia, that may or may not have something to do with the crime. And a Philadelphia police officer had observed a van, made a car stop.
So Tim changed directions and drove to Philly.
And once I arrived at the scene, we decided to take that person down to the homicide division at the Roundhouse. I proceeded there, met with the person, interviewed the person. When that was finished, then I came here to the police station.
And you ruled that person out?
I did, yes.
I couldn't get right over to the hospital because the police thought that they found somebody. One of my secretaries thought she saw a blue van pulling out of the parking lot. And within minutes, they pulled over a blue van. They thought the guy matched the description. They thought the vehicle matched the description. And they wanted my secretary to go there because she saw this van. They wanted my other secretary to go because she saw the person. So the three of us went. They didn't want to go alone. And we went. It turned out that was not the person, that he had a very good alibi. I'm sure he had a terribly long, horrible day himself, too, because they did take him to the police station and ask him lots of questions.
So that was that day?
That was that day, probably within 6 hours of the homicide occurring. So at that point in time, investigators had to try and focus on a motive. What we would think would be the motive for killing Eric Birnbaum.
And so, take me back. Did you guys go to the crime scene? Did you go to his office during that month? What did you do when you got there?
Well, the first thing we did is met with Terry, and we slept because it was midnight at that point. And the next morning, we went to the police station, and we met Detective Pinkerton and some other people, and we had to answer the usual questions. Where were you? And do you know what happened? And why do you think this happened? And just all sorts of really bizarre things to ask us. I mean, for heaven's sake, I lived in California and my parents in Florida. But through the month, we went to the mortuary. We planned a funeral. We went to his office. I think we emptied his house. Then maybe we went back to empty his house. We knew where the crime scene was in a parking lot right outside Terry Goldberg's law firm. So I don't know that we actually went there. It was too sad, but we did all the things that you do. We had a funeral and we sat Shiva and we, you know, tried to make the girls peaceful and make ourselves peaceful and figure out how to keep living. In the Jewish religion, the person is buried very quickly, and then afterwards is time for grieving, and you say prayers every day at sunset. I guess it's sunrise and at sunset. The mourner's prayers. You sit for 7 days until it's the Sabbath, and then you get up from sitting Shiva. They call it getting up. And traditionally, people bring food because you don't do anything. You don't wear jewelry. You don't wear makeup. It's a very solemn time. And family and friends come and pay their respects and keep you company, and they just hold your hand. And I'm thinking that, actually, now that I'm thinking of it, we couldn't really do that because I didn't live in Philly and my parents didn't live in Philly. So we just sort of had a mini version of that at Eric's ex-wife's house, because there really wasn't any place for us to do that. It was just a crazy time. I can't even think about how sad that time was.
When we come back, we'll go over some of the theories and rumors that were going around Holland after Eric's murder. And the district attorney and lieutenant decide to show us something they've never made public before. A piece of evidence that's being released for the first time. Stay with us.
When there's no closure to the mystery and the sorrow, Gone Cold is KYW News Radio's true crime podcast about unsolved cases in the Philadelphia area.
Someone has to know what happened and who did this.
We searched the wooded area. We searched dumpsters.
Someone's life ended tonight. It's the most important thing you can investigate as a police officer.
Who has the clue that unlocks the truth? Search for Gone Cold KYW in the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apparently they put something on the news right away that showed my sign, which is the same size as the sign out there now, but at that time it just said Terry D. Goldberg and Associates. And the flashing news story was that a 51-year-old lawyer was shot in Holland. It didn't mention names. So somebody that I went to law school with saw that and started spreading word around throughout the legal community that I was shot. I was getting messages on my own voicemail machine saying how sorry they were that I was shot. And it was no consolation that I wasn't, because my best friend was, you know, dying.
That wasn't the only rumor that flew around after the shooting.
Everyone has a theory. Everyone thought, you know, it's a case of mistaken identity.
There were all kinds of thoughts going on in a lot of people's minds. There were stories that I heard just through rumors on the street that were making me angry. You know, people who were sure it was meant for me. Having known Eric so well and knowing that his past was squeaky clean, you know, he didn't do illegal or improper things. He just didn't. He wouldn't even bend an ethical rule. So I just couldn't fathom who would want to do that to him. So at the beginning, yeah, I was thinking, was it something that was meant for me? Was it something that someone was angry at the firm? I just couldn't imagine anyone being angry at Eric to do that to him.
Did Terry and Eric drive similar vehicles?
Terry and Eric did not drive similar vehicles.
You know, I was driving a white Mercedes convertible at the time. He was driving a black four-door sedan.
But certainly their stature and their build and the clothes they would wear during the day would be similar. From the back, you might not know who it was.
They felt at the time as though whoever did this was casing the place out and knew what they were doing. And nobody would mistake me for Eric. Not in terms of looks, not in terms of the time we arrived, not in terms of the cars we drove, but you can't help but think, wow, Eric's, there's nothing about him that I could imagine anyone ever being angry about, so maybe.
I tried to think of everything I could think of, and we couldn't think of anything. And I was like calling Detective Pinkerton every day. What's happening? What's up? Did anything happen? Did you find anything out? And just nothing.
They asked questions that I think were appropriate at the time about both he and I, you know, asking if he was into gambling or drugs or someone else's wife or, you know, things like that. And I was sure that he wasn't. He would have told me. You know, we were that close that he would have told me that that was going on, or he would have asked me my opinion on it, or it wouldn't be a secret, not between him and I.
No money, no jealous husbands, no jealous girlfriends, no jealous wife. Just no reason, no bad business practices, nothing. You know, I just don't see any progress because I guess they can't figure out a motive, because there's no place in my brother's life that you could see that he had done something so terrible that someone would want to hurt him in this way. And when we went to his house with the police, there were messages on the answering machine to the family of Eric, people crying, people saying he was such an amazing person and how could this happen? They didn't know how else to express their grief, and they left the messages on his answering machine at his house. I thought that was so amazing.
So you've looked into relationships that he's had, and nothing is...
Nothing. We looked at a lot of people, and eliminated those as persons of interest.
I know there's been reports about mistaken identity that maybe somebody was going after Terry Goldberg instead. I mean, that's just been in papers. The Bucks County Courier Times wrote a whole piece on that. Can you speak to that at all?
I mean, I'll field this one, give you some plausible deniability.
I'm Matt Weintraub, Bucks County District Attorney. When I came back to the office in 2011, I was assigned this open case homicide. When I became district attorney, got reassigned to my first assistant, but I still have a real interest in this case because I became involved in the investigation for years. The way the detectives work is very methodical, and we've talked about elimination. I think Sherlock Holmes was the one who said, if you can eliminate all the other suspects, if there's only one left, no matter how improbable, that's your person. We've tried to do that, even with motives, because if we could have the motive clearly defined for us, it would help us set us on a path, because then you could just search everybody related to that motive. Because of all the elimination that we've been able to affirmatively accomplish, we're left with a couple of recurring possibilities. This mistaken identity, but not random, meaning that Eric was mistakenly killed where the murderer was intended to kill somebody else. I don't really buy this, but it could be that this was to send a message to another person that is still alive. We see that a lot in movies and on TV. Generally, that's not the case, because that's a pretty final and fatal message to send to somebody. One was that there was some neighborhood or neighbor dispute, but I can't say for sure, but that's one that we've heard.
So here's what that's all about. I talked to people in Eric's life, and they told me this story about apparently a parking situation in and around Eric's neighborhood. In the development, there were very short driveways and smaller roads that were kind of weaving through this development. There was a sign that was up there. It was a sign from the township that said no truck parking or something along those lines. One of the neighbors had a truck and apparently parked it close to where Eric had to get in and out of his driveway. Eric ended up pointing out this sign to the neighbor saying there's no truck parking here. Eventually, that sign was somehow ripped or torn down. Basically, Eric could not get out of his driveway when that truck was parked there. So it became a problem and it kind of escalated. So when the district attorney is talking about this neighbor dispute, this is the story that was kind of floated around.
Those are still all open, and we don't want to rule out other potential motives, because maybe we have it wrong, but we have heard those motives as well.
So we've talked a lot about everything the police don't have yet. The motive behind Eric's murder, for one, that's the big one. But there are a few things they do have, including some evidence that hasn't been released publicly.
Surveillance video? Is there any on that?
There is some surveillance video. It's been analyzed and reviewed as part of the case.
And was that ever publicized?
It was not publicized.
DNA? Is there any DNA?
We, at the time, did some collections. And I can say this much, that we, every year, we continue to have that DNA analyzed.
So surveillance video, there's some DNA, there's something.
There's something.
Okay.
One more clue they're working with. Police think they have a pretty good idea what their suspect looks like. A description from one of the people in the parking lot who caught a glimpse of him after he shot Eric.
What is the description of this person that came up?
White male, 30 to 40 years of age, dark black curly hair, ski cap, dark sunglasses, average height, average build.
Did you put out a sketch or like any pictures or any...
We released a description of the suspect and the vehicle, but we did not release a photo or a composite sketch.
Do you have a composite sketch?
We have a composite sketch that we believe is close to the suspect.
What would be like a reason for us, for me, for the media not to get a hold of that? I'm just curious.
At this point, I don't know that there is one. Our goal now is, as it always was, but to take measures to try to solve this case. So if that would be helpful, I think we should... I would need to talk with the lieutenant and detective, but I certainly would not object to releasing the sketch, and I have to talk to you about the video, the surveillance video.
So, District Attorney Weintraub and Lieutenant Pinkerton and their team decided to release the sketch. It's the first time it's ever been publicly released. It's on our Twitter and Instagram, the Facebook group, kywnewsradio.com. Go take a look. Send it to your friends and family. Someone you know who lived or worked nearby 10 years ago. This is a really important opportunity to get some forward momentum in this case. Matt and Charles and all of the officers and detectives who have been working on this for a decade are making another big push to solve Eric's murder right now. And releasing the sketch is just part of it. They're also going to profile the cold case on Crime Watch.
We have had great success receiving anonymous tips via Crime Watch. People that don't want to get involved, but sometimes we post a video of something and they say, hey, this is who you need to go talk to. They submit them and we solve crimes very successfully using Crime Watch.
Crime Watch is all one word. You can download the app or look for it online. And we'll have a link in the show notes as well.
At this point, it's leave no stone unturned. We've tried a lot of the traditional measures to solve this case. My viewpoint is this was a cold-blooded, calculated killing. This killer acted deliberately, intentionally, with malice. He had a plan. He sat there and waited for somebody. If not Eric Birnbaum. Eric Birnbaum was the unfortunate victim of this murder. And then the killer got in his van and drove away. We're at the point now, almost 10 years later, they've spoken with hundreds of people in interviews and run down all kinds of leads spanning four different states. I don't believe in coincidences, and I think it's very difficult to keep a killing like this a secret. So people out there know something about this that just aren't coming forward. We need a little bit of luck on our side now and some help from the public to solve this case.
People constantly ask me about this case. And they ask me, you know, what's going on with, you know, that attorney in Holland that was murdered. Constant chatter amongst people in this community, and I'm sure you encounter attorneys, you know, through the bar and through your that ask about it.
Absolutely.
There's this picture of Eric. And I have it in my file at work. And he just has this little half smile, and his eyes just have this sort of deep, I don't know, like melancholy in them. Like, it's very hard to shake that image when I think of this case. You guys probably know the picture I'm talking about. And he's in a suit and tie. And I don't want to be so dramatic to say it haunts me, but every time that I think of this case, that's the image that pops up in front of my face.
I still take his children out to dinners every couple of weeks or so, or brunch, you know, whenever we can get together. They text me frequently. I call them a lot. They're younger. They text me more.
What would it mean to you for this case to be solved?
It's my number one on my wish list. I'm not sure I'll be happy with the answer. There's more bad scenarios of an answer that I could think of than good scenarios. But still, I want this thing to be solved. For closure, people talk about closure all the time. I'm sure I would still think about him every day. So it would just close a chapter of the book. It wouldn't close the whole book for me. I'd like to know why. I'd like to know who.
What it would mean to me, it would give me an understanding of why this happened. It wouldn't make it better, and it wouldn't bring my brother back, but it would make me feel at least a bit of understanding.
As the years went by, I realized it affected my own son worse than I saw at the time. Maybe my head was clouded at the time. But then a few years later, it came out that he was really struggling and suffering with it. He was scared to take out the trash and walk it from our garage to our sidewalk. He kept that all inside for a long period of time. He wanted me to stop working. I remember him saying, why don't you just retire? Because I joked around and told him I was gonna become a detective and figure it out. And he said, why don't you just become retired and let the detectives figure it out?
On a selfish note, I miss spending time with him. I would like my dad not to be the way he is because he lost his son. My brother and I talked two or three times a week, all the time, forever. We talked about our parents and growing up and what amazing parents we had, what a great family. And now my friend is gone.
If there's something that you would like to say to somebody that may have seen something, scared to come forward, or know something, now's your time, whatever you want to say.
Coincidentally, I did talk to someone who recalls that time. I spoke to them recently about something very different. And they said, I remember that when that happened. I remember hearing the noise and thinking it was a car backfiring. And then later in the day, hearing that it had been a gunshot. What I would say is that a very good citizen, a good father, a good brother, a good son is missing, is gone. And for what? Nobody knows why. No one can figure out the motive. And if anybody knows anything and we can get some justice and, more important, just some answers, why would this happen? I can't restore my dad's mind. I can't get my nieces their father back. But it would be helpful, at least to me, to know what precipitated this. Was it really a case of mistaken identity? Was it somebody they wanted to join a gang, and in order to join the gang, they had to go out and do some outrageous thing and not get caught? I mean, like, why do these things happen? And they're happening so much more all over the country. It's pretty frightening. So I would just ask anybody that has any knowledge of this that can possibly help us understand to please come forward.
So here's where you come in. This happened 10 years ago. It's a long time. It's been a decade. And investigators are now hoping that relationships may have changed, or maybe someone out there has a crisis of conscience and wants to get something off their chest. You can submit an anonymous tip or call police. Give them a nudge in the right direction.
Anything somebody saw or might know, even very minuscule.
I think people are intimidated, afraid that they're going to be wasting the police's time, or that the police will be angry at them for offering such an insignificant to them detail. They don't know what we know. They don't know that could be the missing piece to the puzzle.
Say, hey, can I just talk to somebody? I was there that day, and just share, you know, what I saw, what I heard in the time afterwards. Absolutely.
Please let us be the judge of how important that information is, even if it's you think you thought you knew something but aren't sure. It doesn't hurt to let us know. The point that we're engaging in this podcast is because we want to make sure that people know that it's okay to tell us something that may not seem important to you but may be critical to us.
You can call Northampton Township Police if you've seen anything or if you heard anything maybe 10 years ago that you think could help out. We'll also add a link to how you can send an anonymous tip to our Facebook page and our Twitter and Instagram pages. That's at Gone Cold Philly.
We ended up having a lot of sound we didn't use in the episode. That happens pretty much every time. So we were wondering if you wanted to hear it. We could do a bonus episode where we go over some of the deleted scenes from episode 6. Let us know. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all Gone Cold Philly. One more thing. We'd like to ask for your help to keep making this podcast.
The best thing you can do for us is find us on iTunes and leave a rating and review, and then tell a friend about us.
Gone Cold is made by Kristen and me, right here at KYW News Radio in Philadelphia. Our theme music is by Obi Daz. Holly Stevens made the trailer for this episode that's floating around. And Charlotte Reese took most of the photos and videos you'll find on our Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
I'm Kristen Johansson.
I'm Tom Rickert.
Thanks for listening.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
A gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection. Because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit SmileGeneration.com/confidence today. and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.